And as we get started this morning, I want to reread our focus scripture and just briefly talk about where we've gotten to in these last 2 weeks and where we're wanting to go to today. And I looked a little bit. I was on vacation this week, so I didn't spend a tremendous amount of time on it. But I looked at this last week, and there are, I would say, many, many, many verses in the Bible where you can read contrary opinions on. This is one of the biggest ones around. There's factions of the Christian belief that's based on it, and it's caused people to leave churches, start churches. So it's a very big topic. And I'll read a response that I found from David Jeremiah, and this is where this study comes from, that he talked about, and I thought it was a very good response. And he said, essentially, that there comes to a point in Christian belief with some things that we just have to trust God's sovereignty and understand that there are some things we may not know and understand totally till we get to heaven. And I think I can make a list of some of those things, right? I'm sure you can too. And this may be one of those. They may be, you know, there's some writings, and I saw a list. I wished I had printed it out the other day. And it used sayings or things that people may write and have one idea when they write it. And when you read it, you get a totally different idea from it. Right. And I'm sure y'all read things like that. We don't exactly know some of the writings like that in the Bible. This may be one of them that we just can't. Yet, you know, Paul may have been writing something down, and we just don't get the exact meaning that Paul was after. But as we went through here, just to kind of review a little bit, two things that really sticks to my mind from this, and that I think we've learned from these 2 weeks that we've spent with this, and one of them is that the plan for salvation and God's plan for us was created in eternity past. And that plan that God created in eternity past, and you can pick a number of years. We could all pick a number of years. There's no way that our mind can comprehend, or even there's no way to know when that eternity past happened. And that what happened in eternity past applies to eternity future at whatever time when God chooses to send Jesus back for his children. And I think that is a very important part from what we've learned in the last 2 weeks, and that this plan of salvation was put together. It was quote implemented, for the lack of a better word, and it still holds true today, just like it did when Paul wrote this. It's the same. It's the same. Didn't change. And as we go through this last part of it, I want to focus really on an interesting part that I found out. When you look at some of the writings from the Bible, we think about prophecy a lot, and we think about things that's written in the Bible that's directed for future things to happen. That was true in the Old Testament. A lot of those prophecies have come to true. And there's a lot of prophecies that we read in the New Testament, including from Jesus Christ himself, that will come true in future times, right? And he talks about there will be a time. So he's talking about future activities. The one thing to pay attention to these two verses is the tense that this is written in. And the tense that this is written in is past tense, that these things have happened. So So if you can rewind back to your high school English and think about that as we read these, okay? And I'm gonna read these two verses, and then we're gonna get on to closing this out. Romans 8, starting with verse 29. For whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, and he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Moreover, he predestined, past tense. Then he called, past tense. Whom he called, he also justified, past tense. Whom he justified, he also glorified, past tense. So all of these, this action was created in eternity past, if that kind of helps to frame this, okay? So last week we closed out Sunday talking about justification. And if you remember, we had the story of the lady who had run up a bill at a department store on her credit card, we'll say, and she didn't have the means to pay this bill. All right? All right, so I'll read to you this actual this story. Of course, it's a false story, but it's a good story. All right. So this guy wrote it, and he says she ran this up at a large branch of a large company. The debt was above her means to pay it. He said, I mean, it was huge. There was no possibility that she could ever pay it. Hearing the case, the store were it after hearing the case, if the store were to cancel her debt, that would be forgiveness. So the debt would be forgiven. Under these circumstances, the woman would no longer be liable for account, but she would also have the feeling of personal discomfort about the whole transaction. If, on the other hand, the legal department of the company decided to press for payment, that would be justice. So they would go after her legally to obtain justice because she didn't pay her bill. Suppose that while she was awaiting trial for her undischarged account, the woman were to marry the wealthy son of the store owner, who personally assumed the debt, the responsibility for her account, and paid it in full. Right? So to the woman, don't get much better than that, right? If that were to happen, there would be no legal claim against her anymore. In the unlikely event of her case ever getting to court, she could plead not guilty all charges on the grounds that her debts had been fully paid by her husband. The court would say that she was justified in pleading not guilty, and her case would be dismissed. If the person is to be forgiven, he must plead guilty and plead for mercy. If a person is to be justified, he must plead not guilty and show the opposition has no case against him at all. Of course, forgiveness and justification both enter into salvation. But the Lord Jesus has fully discharged all of our obligations, so there's no legal ground for the charges to ever be pressed against us anymore. And moreover, he has given us a perfect standing before God, so that when we're fully accepted in the sight of the Almighty Jesus. He goes on to say, it says, justification is way more than if it never happened. It's way more if we ever sin. Justification does not mean just if it never happened. The penalty for sin has been fully paid, and the place of our sin has been forgiven us to the righteousness of Jesus Christ. I thought that was a very good analogy to what justification is. All right. So now we want to look at the last one of this five chains of salvation that we have on the board. And actually, I got this one in the correct order. We're going to look at glorification. So this is the last thing that Paul mentions in this chain of salvation that he's talking about. And I want to look and I'm going to read a good bit, and these are quotes that I've put together right here. It's not mine, it's other quotes, but I want to read about this, what glorification truly means. All right, So I want to read this again. I'm going to read a good bit right here. Romans 8:30 concludes this way. And whom he justified, these he also glorified. God foreknew us, the first chain. He predestined us, the second. He called us. He justified us. And now the last announcement is we'll be glorified. Some interesting thing right here. The word glory is used extensively in the Bible, and almost all of the uses of glory refer to the glory of God. We all know that. But when Paul writes here, what Paul writes here, that he who he justified is now glorified, he's talking about us, of course. One day we're going to be glorified just like Jesus, right? Agree with that? Right? He said, now then, this is when I wanted to look at these tenses, that you're glorified. All of these are past tense, and glorified is the same way. So this plan, this plan of salvation that Paul's talking about, and these five links to salvation has already been put into place. It's not something that we put into place now. This plan, way before Paul wrote this, has already been put into place, right? So this guy goes on to write, and he says this. What does it mean that it's been done in the past? He said, that means in the eyes of God, we're already glorified. He sees us in our finished edition as glorified. One day we'll realize the glorification in reality when we're in heaven. But in God's eyes, this is already, the plan has already been taking place and put into action. There's one guy wrote this. He says, do you know what God expects us to do? He expects us to act like that we know where we're going to. This is a really good statement. And who we're going to become. We're to live our lives every day for the Lord Jesus Christ, trying to bring glory to his name. We're to act like we're already glorified because in God's eyes we are. Have you ever had your mother say, like, act like you you act like somebody, you need to act like somebody?
You shall know them by their fruit.
Yeah, exactly. So as we go on, I want to talk a little bit about these whole five links and wrap it back up to glory. And please stop me at any time with any comments you have. So these are some comments that I found. He says, so these five links to salvation tell us this, all right, that our salvation is such an important thing that it began before the world began. Think about that. Think about what a statement that is. It doesn't end until we stand before Jesus Christ, glorified in his presence. Our salvation is an eternal issue. He says, you may not understand everything about election, and it may be the verse confuse you, but pick out one of the points and thank God for it today. Could you thank God for being called, or being justified, or being glorified? Absolutely, right? So let's look at a few of these controversial points of this last part. And I thought this was pretty good. So, and again, these are commentaries. So, but to bear with me as we go through them. All right. So sometimes one guy wrote this. He said sometimes people argue this way. Well, if salvation is all of God and it's not of man, then man has no responsibility to do anything about his salvation. He should just sit back and be passive and let God be God. Don't work that way, does it? He says, but this is what we must understand. The sovereignty of God does not in any way diminish the responsibility of man. From man's perspective, we're totally responsible before God. From God's perspective, we're chosen in him before the foundation of the world. All right? And Scott goes on right. He says, say you don't understand that. He said, say it's hard. He said, but let me tell you something else. And this is something David Jeremiah wrote. And I quoted this a couple of weeks ago. And he says, someday when you get to heaven, let's just assume you get to heaven gates and you're ready to walk in a gate, and over the gate, there's a sign. And this is what that sign reads. Whosoever will may come. You agree with that? He said, then you walk in the gate, you turn around and you look back up, and on the inside of the gate, there's another sign. And that sign says, chosen in him before the foundation of the world. And so tie those two together. And he goes on to say, he says, we don't know except what God tells us. And he says, all I need to know is that God called me, I responded, and I said yes. I don't need to know all the other stuff. When I get to heaven one day, I'm going to look on my shoulder and I'm going to find out this is what God said, and he chose me for the foundation of the world. All right? Another controversial point. He said, there's another response to this type doctrine. He said, kind of similar. But some who hear the message, like we've been talking about, will look at this. Well, if God is so sovereign in salvation, then we have no responsibility to evangelize a lost. Because if they're going to get saved, they're going to get saved no matter what we do. We talked about that, right? The Calvinistic type view. I mean, possibly, I guess you could say that some of the Pentecostal type views, right? So you could look at it. Okay. So it goes on to say, and he said, after all, the elect are going to be saved whether we witness to them or not. And the argument is that's not true. So because the same God who tells us about the sovereign purpose of salvation is the God who commands us to go into the world and preach the gospel to every creature. The God who is sovereign and then the goal of salvation is also sovereign, and that means to that goal. And I've never heard of this. This is Lorraine Bettner. If you've ever heard of Lorraine Bettner, I said it this way. This is a quote. The decree of election is a secret decree. Since there's no revelation has been given to the preacher as to one among his hearers are elect and which ones are not, it is not possible for him to present the gospel only to the elect. It is his duty to look with hope on all those who he is preaching to and pray for him that each one may respond. In order to offer the message to the elect, he must offer it to all. And the scriptures commands him to do that very thing and preach the gospel to all. I thought that was an interesting point, right? Another interesting comments on this, some comments. Said some say the doctrine discourages evangelism, right? In fact, think about it. Every time somebody preaches, there's candidates for salvation in the audience. This goes on to write, and he says, every time I preach, there's somebody out there that perhaps God has been working on in their life. He said, I might get to be the one who shakes the hand when they come to Jesus. He said, it's not about me. It's about them. It's about God working in their lives. He goes on to say, here's what I know. I'm going to let God worry about his sovereignty, and I'm going to worry about my responsibility. I'm going to look at it this way. Maybe you can join me, and let's say we're all standing in the middle of a train track. And he says, the one rail is the sovereignty of the God, and one rail is the free will of man. He said, and we're looking all the way down. You see the track. It doesn't come together to infinity. He says, it stays apart, but ultimately, as you look at it, at least from your perspective, it comes together. He said, you know you'll understand the free will of man and the sovereignty of God's work when you get to heaven. And he says, don't expect somebody to explain the difference. I thought that was pretty good. He said, all I can tell you is there are two different doctrine teaching in the Bible. They're built in tension between them, but think of them as two rails that ultimately will get resolved in the future. He goes on a lot, but he quotes two verses out of Acts. First one is 18, 9, and 10. And it says, do not be afraid, but speak and do not keep silent, for I am with you and no one attack you. Now, Paul's in Corinth at this time. And then listen to the other word that was written. He says, for I have many people in this city. In other words, God's appointed a number of people in Corinth who has not yet heard the gospel, right? So God's chosen. He's chosen all, right? He says, who believe in those who've been appointed to eternal life? Well, you say, I don't understand that. And he goes on to write, said, you don't need to understand some things, but you just have to accept some things that you don't understand. And he says, goes on to say, he says, if you're a Christian today, you don't walk around singing the song that I heard somebody sing when I was growing up. I found what I wanted when I found the Lord. And he said, you didn't find the Lord. You weren't even looking for him when you found him. I thought that was pretty interesting. It says, many people spend time arguing the doctrine, but they have no little time left to appreciate it. Said, you know, we should strive to understand everything we can about the working of God in the world, and then stop being discouraged. We can't even understand it all, because he is God. And his ways are higher than our ways. His thoughts are higher than our thoughts. So, you know, as we close out and we look at this doctrine, and we've kind of picked it apart this week, and we've looked at a lot of different parts about this doctrine. And, you know, there has been people that's left this church to be in a church that really looked at people being chosen in eternity past for those that will go to heaven, and other people chosen that will not go to heaven. For me personally, I don't buy that. I can't buy that part. If you believe that part, it's hard to understand why Jesus gave the Great Commission. That's for me. That's the big breaking point for me.
You know, we could have Paul right here in the room with us. This is speculating. But if we had Paul right here in the room with us, and he got all this literature that's been written since he wrote, he might just be going, I can't believe what you people have done. I make these statements, and then here y'all go off making mountains out of molehills, you know, and you start dividing on people. Calm down. Chill.
I agree with you.
My point here is because right on God says it, or if he says if God is for us, who can be against us? You know, he gives us this reassurance. He's not trying to introduce some philosophical meltdown, which we've done for 2,000 years. He's trying to actually reassure the believer that your salvation is absolutely secure.
Solid.
Whether you appeal to God's absolute sovereign will or predestination, or whether you appeal to his omniscience, what his free creatures will do, this foreknowing, whether you appeal to either one, the conclusion is the same. You're justified and you're glorified. And this has been, I think what Paul wants to do is just reassure us of how certain we can be of our salvation. We can be so certain that, you know, I mean, of course, this is putting it in past tense. This is using, you know, our time ways and terms that God did all this for it. You trust me. I think
positive. You kidding me? Y'all are kidding. You kidding me?
I can't believe how y'all have done that.
You know, and it is, and you know it. I think the one thing that I guess bothers me about people doing the things you do is if it puts doubt in people's minds. That's the part I think really gets to me about it.
That is absolutely true, because I think this business about the elect, you know, I've read R.C. Sproul, who's a 5-point Calvinist, and I think he's great on some things, but this is one of these where he talks about false grace. You can be operating under false grace. You can want to be saved, you can think you're saved, but you really aren't, and you don't know. And it's like, oh, okay, am I of the elect? Well, I want to be. I think I am. Well, you may be experiencing false grace. It's false grace. Is there something in the Bible that says that there is such a thing as false grace? You know, and
not there.
So it's, to me, it's very you can get all tore up of wondering, gosh, am I of the elect or not? You know?
Yeah.
To me, that comes from this hard Calvinist teaching that to me it's.
I'll give you a scenario on that same line. This is what I want to use today. So, so we have to pretend a lot when I say this, but just follow me through on it. Let's say we took two twins, two identical twins. They looked the same. They acted the same, totally identical twins. And somehow they lived their life and everything one did, the other one did. Totally the exact same. If you believe the Calvinistic point of view, one of them could go to heaven and one could go to hell. And they did the exact same thing the entire life. They believed the same thing. They followed Jesus' teaching the same way. One of them, not knowing it, could go to hell. And I can't buy that.
And I think that's what Paul would just say if he were here. It's like, these people, no. I'm trying to reassure you that your salvation is so important to God that he predestined it, he foreknew it. But the chain here, whether you appeal to God's sovereign will, whether you appeal to his omniscience, it doesn't matter. Your salvation is certain. And if God's for you, you can be against you. And it's just stop. Just stop there. And like you said before, if there's some nuance, if there's some nuances that are still non-answered, trust God.
John MacArthur made a point one time, and I didn't write down all the scripture, but when Jesus spoke to people, do you remember one of the terms he used? For you believed. Remember hearing that term? And it may be in a different paraphrase. They talked about because you believed. He didn't say because I chose you.
Yeah, the word believe. Look at how many times John in his gospel uses the word believe.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
What was it with Abraham? He believed and it was credited to him as righteousness.
Yeah. Yeah, if the choosing had been there, Jesus would have said, if we believe Jesus is the Son of God, Jesus would have said, I've already chose you. You're going. Don't worry about it. That's not what he said, though.
So what does this put John 3:16?
They redefine the world.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Seriously. I mean, because it says it right there. Everything we need, unless I'm.
Well, I know, and like I said earlier, it's people take something. It's just like the picking up of the serpent. A lot of people believe because if you pick up the serpent, that's biblical. Well, I ain't picking up no snake. I'm sorry. I'm like, what is it? Wendy Bagwell said. I think that was who said it one time. He says, God ain't told me to, and I ain't going to do it.
You got to use your wisdom.
Yeah.
I'm like, how long am I picking up no snake?
I ain't picking up no snake. That ain't going to happen. I'm sorry, Lord, forgive me. That ain't going to happen. Because some things ain't going to happen. That's one thing that ain't going to happen.
Well, we said last week, because of John 3:16, for God so loved the world, so all were called.
All were called.
So is there a difference between being called and the elect? Is the elect the ones who chose? Is there a difference between those two words?
If you read the Greek passage, if you read it in Greek, it doesn't. This is one area that the Greek doesn't clear it up. It talks about it. The Greek gives the. Is it talks really about what God did in, I'm really paraphrasing here, really setting up the salvation that this was put in place. And I think it's just like what Bill said, as Paul was explaining this, again, you got to look at who he was explaining it to. He was writing to, you know, the terminology is Romans, and he's explaining the salvation as he goes through, and it's very clear that he's saying this plan is in place in eternity past. This is not new, folks. This has been there. It's done that for all that are called, for everybody that whosoever will believe. Whosoever will believe in him will have everlasting life.
Could it be that God knew whenever you're called whether you're going to answer or not? You have to answer the call.
You know, that's an interesting point, Marty. And you know, the omniscience of God is we think that God knows everything that has happened, and of course everything that's going to happen. There's this, that railroad track part, and there's obviously a free will of man, right? So you know, did this is way off pace what I'm fixing to say. So you almost go back to Lucifer. So did God foreknow when he created the angel Lucifer that Lucifer was going to do what he did?
He had to know.
So why did he do that then? Why didn't he just leave it perfect?
Teach him one moment.
Never thought about that way.
Lucifer was a free creature, you know? And see, and that introduces the idea of, okay, you know, nature versus nurture and that sort of thing. It's like, well, if God made Lucifer perfect, so Lucifer had a perfect, you know, unfallen nature, okay, he's made good, he lives in heaven, so his environment is
perfect
good. Well, what made Lucifer fall?
Exactly.
What made him fall? Well, nothing made him fall. He chose to fall. You know, that's libertarian free will.
So back to your thing. To me, the free will of man comes into play in a way I can't understand all of it. If God knows all of that, then and it's he knows the decisions you're going to make, and that's not going to change. Then if you look at it solely from that side, then what good does it do to evangelize? Because it's already going to take place. But so the free will, it's just that railroad track thing. Is how does that free will work? If this side's God's sovereignty and God chooses you, and over here it's the free will, and you can say yes or no. I don't know.
That's what faith comes in, I guess.
Yeah, but my faith tells me, exactly. My faith tells me that this eternity plan for salvation was created a long time ago. But reading the Bible tells me that if I believe and I trust in Jesus Christ, that I'm saved and I'll be in heaven and I'll be glorified and I'm justified for my sins.
So there you go. Are you the elect?
I believe.
Therefore, okay. You are.
Yeah.
No more.
Don't create no more problems. Right.
There is a system. There is a philosophical system. And I remember going through this with the high school students. You know, there is, because we got into this. But there is a philosophical system that if you're like, I don't want to stop, I want to keep beating this dead horse, you know, I want to find some way to reconcile human free will and God's sovereignty, because both are biblically true. We are free and God is absolutely sovereign. It's like, how do you put those two together? How do you reconcile? Now, you could just say, I don't care. I'm going to trust God, and when I see him in a beatific vision, then I'll know if it still matters to me to know. Okay. That's, to me, that's perfectly. But If you did want to go a little further and find some way to how have people reconcile this, there's a very clever, and it's not without its objectors. My own theology professor objected to it, but that may be one place where I would have parted from him and say, not so fast, this has merit. But it's called Molinism, and it goes back to a Jesuit priest back in the 15th century, or 16th century, and Jose de Molina. And it's actually kind of clever. You want to hear the 5-minute spiel on it?
Sure.
What it involves is a thought exercise of multiple worlds. Okay, not multiverse. We're not talking about that. It's the multiple worlds thing. And it's like, if you can imagine that God, in eternity past, had a set of DVDs, okay, to use old school technology, had a set of DVDs that he could review, and each one of these DVDs is a possible world that he could have made the real world. Each one of these DVDs has every human choice of all the billions of people that have ever lived, all their individual choices, how those choices play out. And this is a thought exercise, obviously. It's not biblical.
Yeah.
But yet the conclusion, maybe he has all these DVDs, all these, you know, he picks a world here where Mr. and Mrs. Hitler never met. Adolf was never born. You know, World War II never happened. Okay. Here's a DVD where, you know, I didn't choose to be saved. Here's a DVD where I did choose to be saved. You know, and he has all these wildly divergent paths of human history. Which one does he pick? Some of these worlds have a Holocaust. Some of these worlds have, you know, the killing fields of Cambodia. Some don't. You know, so you look at them and say, okay, God's going to make one of these worlds the real world. On what basis does he choose? Well, you might say that, well, being that God is goodness himself, he would choose the world that has the most good and the least evil. Yeah, the best possible world. Well, that makes sense. But I would submit to you that what's more important to him than whether or not there's a Holocaust or a Cambodian killing fields or any Armenian genocide, whatever, is he wants to maximize the number of people saved and minimize the number of people wanted. So if you say, let's reduce the worlds to 4, not the near infinite that you have to, let's reduce it to 4. Let's reduce it to 4 people. There's only 4 people in these worlds. Again, if you descend it, you know, you say Tom, Dick, Harry, and Susie. Well, there's going to be worlds where Tom freely rejects the belief of God. There's going to be worlds where he does. There's going to be worlds where Dick does the same. Some worlds where he chooses, some worlds where he chooses not. There's going to be the same for Harry and the same for Susie. Well, God's going to look at maybe the world here where Dick, Harry, and Susie all freely choose in that world, those worlds, to believe God. But that's the same world that Tom doesn't choose to believe God. And God says, I want to maximize the saved, minimize the unsaved. So that's the world I'm going to instantiate. That's the world I'm going to make real. That world may have a Holocaust in it, but there may be other atrocities in some of those worlds that didn't happen in this world that, you know, I want to maximize the saved, minimize the unsaved, so I'm going to make this world real. And by doing that, I have elected Dick, Harry, and Sally, and I have elected, if you will, Tom, the damnation. But in every world, it was always their choice. There you go. You have God's absolute sovereignty. Bam. preserved. You have human free will preserved. Bring the two together, and it makes a lot of sense. We talked to Andy Richard, we're talking about, you know, Judas. God predestined Judas to betray Jesus. He's the son of perdition. He's offered 30 pieces of silver. Well, maybe that's because God knows that if Judas was offered 30 pieces of silver, he would freely choose to betray Jesus. But he also knows that if he was offered 20, he wouldn't. So God, in his sovereign will, orchestrates circumstances where Judas's price is met and Judas freely chooses to betray Jesus. God knows all the counterfactuals. He knows all the if-then. You know, if this, then so-and-so will do this. He knows that because he sees all of the human choices all the way through. I know. It makes a lot of sense. Now, where it fails, where my professor objected to it, was that it still makes God's creative choices or creative will based on a survey of, like a complete survey of all possible human action. And I can understand that. I can understand that that could be a problem. But on this side of the beatific vision, you know, when we'll know in full what we only can see darkly now, to me, it's the best. It's the best system if you want to have a system.
But one of the writers wrote, said, would Paul be Paul if it wasn't Saul first?
Yeah.
Would he
have,
his Hebrew name, but I mean his past life. Yeah. I mean, what is his past life? If he hadn't have been who he was going after the Christians, would he been as effective as being Paul as he was?
See that's where I think, you know, Paul, God probably knew that Paul loves me. He just doesn't know me.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't know that Jesus is me. You know. And all he needs is a little bit of information. I'll smite him with that information, you know. Because, you know, Paul's got a bulldog personality. Paul's tenacious. He says, man, once I got this guy, and he loves me. He's not a Pharisee in the sense that, you know, he's in it for the social economic perks. He's in it because he actually does love me. All he needs is information to know who it is that he's supposed to play.
Well, I think a lot of us were smitten somehow at times too. So as we wrap up, thanks, Bill. That was really cool. As we wrap up and close out, you know, if you run into somebody that has this Calvinistic view, in my mind, it's not worth the argument.
That's exactly right. I agree with you.
That's right. You can't speak.
It's not worth the argument.
An idiot, right?
Well, they'll bring you to their level. But it's not worth the argument. And I know we've spent 3 weeks to get to the point to say it's not worth the argument. But I think it was, you know, to me, it was worth the time spent to really to try to dig into this and understand, you know, the writings. But it's not worth the argument.
I'm with you 100% about that. Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the biggest takeaway.
We'll all be in heaven someday, and then I'll let God tell you then that you were wrong. So I'm not going to bother to do that now. Or he may tell me I'm wrong.
Any other thoughts, comments?
This class.